By Sunday, the wedding would be over, and for that, Wyn Van Meter was grateful. It was Thursday. He woke early, alone in his Connecticut house, a few late stars still burning above the treetops. His wife and two daughters were already on Waskiki, in the island house, and as he came swimming up out of sleep, he thought of them in their beds there, Biddy keeping to her side, his daughter's hair fanned over their pillows. But first he thought of a different girl, or barely thought of her. She was a bubble bursting on the surface of a dream, who was also asleep on Waskiki. She would be in one of the brass guest beds up on the third floor, under the eaves. She was one of his daughter's bridesmaids. Most mornings, Wynne's entries into the waking world were prompt, his torso canting up from the sheets like the mast of a righted sailboat. But on this day, he turned off his alarm clock before it could ring and stretched his limbs out to the bed's four corners. The room was silent, purple, and dim. By nature, he disapproved of lying around. Lost time could not be regained, nor missed mornings stored up for later use. Each day was a platform for accomplishment. "Up with the sun," he had told his daughters when they were children, whipping off their covers with a flourish and exposing them lying curled like shrimp on their mattresses. Now Daphne was a bride. A pregnant bride, no point in pretending otherwise, and Livia, her younger sister, the maid of honor. The girls and their mother were spending the whole week on the island with an ever-multiplying bunch of bridesmaids and relatives and future in-laws, but he had decided he could not manage so much time away from work. Which was true enough. A whole week on the matrimonial front lines would be intolerable, and furthermore, he had no wish to confirm that the bank would rumble on without him, his absence scarcely noticed except by the pinstriped young sharks who had begun circling his desk with growing determination. He switched on the lamp. The windows went black, the room yellow. His jaundiced reflection erased the stars and trees, and he felt a twinge of regret at how lamplight obliterated the pre-dawn world, turning it not into day but night. Still, he prided himself on being a practical person, not a poetic soul, vulnerable to starlight and sleep fuzz, and he reached for his glasses and swung his feet to the floor. Before going to bed, he had laid out his traveling clothes, and when he emerged from the shower, freshly shaven and smelling of bay rum, he dressed efficiently and trotted downstairs, flipping on more lights as he went. He had packed Biddy's Grand Cherokee the night before, fitting everything together with geometric precision, all the items forgotten and requested by the women, plus bags and boxes of groceries, clothes for himself, and sundry wedding odds and ends. While the coffee brewed, he went outside with the inventory he was keeping on a yellow legal pad and began his final check. He rifled through a row of grocery bags in the back seat and opened the driver's door to check for his phone charger, his road atlas, even though he could drive the route with his eyes closed, and a roll of quarters, crossing each off the list in turn. Garment bags and duffels, stuffed to fatness, made a bulwark in the back, and he had to stand on tiptoe and lean into the narrow pocket of air between them and the roof to confirm the presence, in the middle of it all, of a glossy white box, the size of a child's coffin, that held Daphne's wedding dress.
"Don't forget the dress, Daddy," the answering machine had warned in his daughter's voice the previous night. "Here, Mom wants to say something."
"Don't forget the dress, Wyn," said Biddy.
"I won't forget the damn dress," Wyn had told the plastic box. He crossed dress off the list and slammed the back hatch. Birds were calling, and yellow light bled through the morning haze, touching the grassy undulations and low stone wall of his neighbor's estate. Strolling down the driveway to retrieve his newspaper from a puddle, he noticed a few stones that had fallen from the wall onto the shoulder of the road, and he crossed over to restore them, shaking droplets from the journal's plastic sack as he went. The hollow sound of stone on stone was pleasant,
and when the repair was done, he stood for a minute stretching his back and admiring the neat Yankee face of his house. Nothing flashy and new would ever tempt him away from this quiet neighborhood, inhabited by quality people. The houses might be large, but they were tastefully shrouded by trees, and many, like his, were full of thin carpets and creaking, aristocratic floors.